So something that I don't freely admit to everybody is that I am, for the first time, getting through the Harry Potter series. All of them.
Oh my gosh.
I'm currently halfway through the fourth book. I don't like reading. We've talked about this.
This is actually a point of pain in our relationship.
I have two books from you.
Yes.
On my coffee table. Haven't touched them.
I know you haven't.
Yeah.
I've committed you several times.
You
will not.
I don't know what it is. But when you do an audio book, because I'm huge into podcasts, that's essentially what an audio book is. It's just this big, long narrative thing.
Yeah.
I am loving it. Turns out Harry Potter is pretty good.
It's a good podcast.
It's a really long podcast. I mean, the fourth book alone is like 20 hours of content.
Gosh.
But anyway, yeah, I'm using Audible and, I'm very much enjoying it. So, I wanted to tell our listeners that we actually have a banner on our website where you can go and if you go specifically through our website and go to Audible and sign up for Audible, then you can get 30 days free. A lot of places you can get 7 days free. You can get a 14-day free trial, but through us, you can get a 30-day free trial of Audible, because then you can try it. You can listen to all 20 hours of the fourth Harry Potter book, and if you don't like it, then you can leave. There's no contract or anything.
So 30 days seems like a lot. Seems like a lot of time to get for free.
Yeah.
Is it because all of the executives at Audible are fans of this podcast?
Every single one of them.
I figured that.
Yeah.
I suspected that. This is proof.
I got a phone call and it was like, hey, we love your podcast. And I'm like, who's we? And it was like, the entire advisory board at Amazon. I was like, that makes sense. I understand.
Amazon?
Amazon owns Audible. You didn't know that?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, we jumped all the way to Amazon.
All the time that he's spending on Blue Origin and his penis rocket, he is listening to Nerd Critic.
Turns out he loves Nerd Critic.
He loves Nerd Critic.
And he's like, hey, you know what
we're
going to do?
Every time he takes a Bic to his head, he's listening to Nerd Critic.
He's like, you know what we're going to do for you, CJ? And I'm like, what? And he's like, we're going to give you 30 days free.
30 days free to anybody who listens to Nerd Critic.
The best they can offer. I tell myself every week I'm going to come up with something different to say other than we're recording at the very beginning.
So you're a liar.
And I never do.
So you lie to yourself, and you lie to me, and you lie to our audience.
I do. I don't mean to. It's an unintentional lie.
No one ever means to lie.
That's not true.
Also a lie. Almost everyone means to lie when they lie.
Yeah.
Well, hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about big movies. From the dual perspective of critical nerdiness, my name is Jordan.
And I am CJ. Jordan here is our studied and credentialed critic.
And CJ is our resident nerd. You look warm, but I don't know what you're wearing that makes you a nerd today.
Today is...
Other than layers. Layers is a very nerdy thing.
Is layers a nerdy thing?
No, it's not.
Oh. I was like, well, that's fitting because I wear layers a lot. Today I'm wearing my classic Superman belt that I always wear.
Good enough.
And a Superman shirt underneath this button up right here. And then on one foot is a Sasquatch sock, and on the other one is a Bigfoot. No, sorry. It's a Yeti and a Sasquatch.
They're different.
They are different. Yeah,
oh,
well,
boy.
Yeah. The abominable snowman is a Yeti.
Yeah, I think I always confuse Sasquatches and Yetis.
I mean, one's winter, one's
not.
Not.
Yeah, one's just woodsy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's pretty much the differentiation.
All right. Well, that works, I guess. I'm definitely not wearing anything nerdy today. I have pink and blue socks.
Nice.
Which I really like. They're
well done.
Pink and blue striped socks.
And you have a blue shirt, so
which
it's
good.
Which
I think that qualifies me for criticism today.
critic, like, because you're the critic. I thought you were asking me to criticize you.
Oh, no, yes. You can. You're always welcome to criticize me.
I mean, do I ever?
You hardly ever do.
I hardly ever do.
It actually disappoints me a lot.
I'm sorry.
I've been meaning to talk to you about this. Please criticize me more. All right, that's the end of the conversation. Unless you have some criticisms for me.
I don't.
can you come more prepared next time?
I will, yes.
Thank you.
Today we are talking about a little movie with two pretty unknown actors.
Yeah. Yep. It's a little no budget passion project from a couple of our friends. We just thought it'd be nice to, you know, invite them onto the podcast and see if they
don't even joke. That would be great. It's a movie called Ford v Ferrari, starring Matt Damon and Christian Bale.
Neither of whom are playing either Ford or Ferrari.
That's true. Well, I think in the U.S. this is the only place that it's called Ford v Ferrari.
Where is it? What's it called?
Everywhere else it's called Le Mans.
Oh.
The name of the race.
Oh.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah. I think.
I did not know that.
I'm guessing that they just insulted our American intelligence and were like, I'm not going to go see a French movie. So.
That is.
But
immensely discouraging.
If you go ahead and put Ford on the front, then all them Americans will definitely come see it.
Oh, yeah. Especially if it's V Ferrari. And especially if Ford wins. All right. Let's talk about this movie because, CJ, we were wrong about which movie won the weekend when it came out.
Devastatingly wrong.
I don't know that we weren't like confident that Charlie's Angels would win. We just wanted to cover Charlie's Angels. I wanted badly to cover Charlie's Angels.
I thought that Charlie's Angels would win.
And CJ thought that Charlie's Angels would win. But we don't regret covering Charlie's Angels because we figured this one, I liked that episode. I think we did a good job. And I like that we covered it. But this movie does, Ford v Ferrari does deserve its own episode. Because
it's been requested by a couple of people. So
here we are. And it was very dominant. It was very, very dominant. It's made a very much amount of money.
Turns out movie stars are a real thing.
They're a real thing.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how and when you saw this movie, CJ? Does it merit any notes? Any commentary?
Wow, not even a little.
Not even a little?
It was a normal movie-going experience.
Me too.
I got popcorn, which isn't always the case.
I didn't even get popcorn,
so
which is almost always the case.
Yeah.
Although I have two $5 coupons on my AMC
that are
waiting to be activated.
Those
and
burn
spent.
Through my pocket quick.
I always save them up. I'm like, I want it for
you. Want to get like a full meal occasion. For free?
No, I just like having a little money in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I like a little walking or a little popcorn money.
Yeah.
So nothing noteworthy. I went by myself after work one day.
Same here.
I just went to see the movie.
Yeah.
And, went by myself. It was fun. It was fun.
I saw it yesterday after work by myself.
You saw it yesterday?
I did.
Oh,
yeah.
I saw it a little bit earlier than that, but whatever. So this movie was directed by James Mangold, who is a, kind of, you know, it's funny because I wouldn't say he's an unknown director, but like he's not a household name, but he's done household name movies like Walk the Line, Kate and Leopold, Night and Day, which wasn't a huge hit, but I liked quite a bit. 3:10 to Yuma, which is amazing. The Wolverine, which was terrible, and Logan, which was great. It turns out he directed both The Wolverine and Logan, which I was impressed to discover.
And Girl Interrupted.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, well, he's done a lot of movies.
Crazy.
So this is one of those guys who just knows how to direct a movie. This is a guy that a studio will hire when they have a big, expensive movie that they need to succeed. They will hire this man.
That's really impressive. Like, I feel like I'm the kind of person that would know who directed Logan. But yeah. I just didn't.
Yeah.
He just kind of, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, huh? It was written by Jez Butterworth and John Henry Butterworth and Jason Keller. So the Butterworths are interesting. It's an interesting thing because Jez Butterworth is a playwright and a screenwriter who often collaborates with his brothers, also Butterworths, naturally. And anyway, they've written some things. I'm not going to get into their catalog, but like these guys are, this is all, what this is the closest thing we've seen, maybe one of the closest things this year. That's a bad way of prefacing. What we're seeing is something we don't see quite as often anymore, which is sort of an old school Hollywood movie where a studio finds a good, like, finds a story that they want to adapt or whatever. They hire some big screenwriters, they hire a big director, they hire big actors, they make it happen, and it's polished and beautiful, and nobody on board is trying this for the first time. Like,
yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Everybody in this movie, from the, like, everybody above the line, these are all, like, top of the line, top of their craft, know what they're doing. Not necessarily famous, except for, obviously, Matt Damon and Christian Bale. Not necessarily, like, household name writers, directors, whatever, producers, I'm sure, but, like, people who have done this for a long time and have done it very successfully.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of this year. It kind of becomes a trend where you have either these superstar filmmakers, the Nolans, the Abrams, you know, the Spielbergs,
yeah,
that are making things, and a lot of the hoopla's around their name.
Yep.
And then it's like that's one side of the spectrum. Then on the other side of the spectrum, you have the Taika Waititi's,
yeah,
and
the Ryan Johnsons.
The Ryan Johnsons, yep, that are kind of they come from smaller roots that are making something big, or they've gone back to the smaller. But you rarely get just like good old faithful, good, yeah, old reliable director, yep, that makes good movies time after time, that just is behind the camera and that's who he is, and it's great. And honestly, this movie reflects that.
You know what? You know who got famous for doing that very thing? Ron Howard.
Ron Howard
is the man that you call when you need a good director, when you need a guy who's just going to direct the movie,
yeah,
and be a good director. And like he's become famous literally for that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that he's not the only one. James Mangold is another guy,
yeah,
who is not famous, but he's the guy that the studio is going to call when they need a big, fat, expensive movie to get made right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's that. I thought it was a noteworthy thing. So let's not spoil. Let's just give like some quick reactions here. I have a few thoughts. Do you have a few thoughts?
I do have a few thoughts.
Go for it.
This is a good movie. Period. This is a movie that I will recommend to anybody at any time of the year, any mood that you're in. It's just a well-crafted, good story with good characters that make decisions that make sense to the character. It has good cinematography. The tone is good. This is all around just kind of a well-packaged machine of a story that is being told. And you don't get a lot of those. Like, there's not a whole lot of blow-your-mind strengths, nor are there heartache weaknesses. It's just solid through and through. It's just a good muscle in the entertainment industry.
Yeah. I think the thing that I wrote when I left the theater is beautifully shot with confident muscular editing. It's a movie that seems like it was made by Ford in 1967.
Yeah.
You use the word machine and I was like, you're getting real close, CJ. Yeah. This is a movie with a reliable engine.
Yeah.
It really does feel like it feels very much what it is. This is a movie that when you see a preview, you're like, I bet I have an idea of what this is going to be like. And then you go and you're like, yep, that's what this was like.
Yeah.
It's
not disappointing in that.
No, it's not disappointing, but I will say that there's a bit of a pretense at depth that isn't there.
Hmm.
This is kind of a sun-kissed movie, that full of nostalgia, but no real wisdom. And it is a surprisingly slow movie about fast cars.
Oh, interesting.
This is a movie that was, I think, close to 2.5 hours long and felt every minute of it.
See, I didn't. I didn't. Huh.
Let me walk that back. I wasn't like bored. I didn't feel like, oh, when is this movie going to end? But like, I didn't get lost in it either. I was just like, this is a movie that is still happening. And it's been happening. Oh, and it's not quite over yet.
You were aware.
But it's almost there. Yeah,
you were aware that you were sitting watching a movie.
Yeah, it felt like a 2 hour and 20 minute movie or whatever it was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is weird because it was about racing, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, there was actually a surprising amount of slowness, some of which was nice, a lot of which felt like, to be honest, I wasn't really impressed by the screenplay. I was impressed by the way that it was executed. Like, the dialogue itself was generally pretty good. Like, the performances were fantastic. My wife made a remark after I had seen it. She saw it actually quite a bit before I did with some family. And then I finally got around to seeing it. And she said, am I right that it would not have worked without Matt Damon and Christian Bale?
Yes.
Like, it would have actually been pretty terrible. And I think she's absolutely right.
Yeah. I mean, I think terrible is a strong word, but yeah, I think that
it would have been boring.
It definitely would have been boring.
And boring is terrible, especially for a big, expensive movie expensive that's IP.
That's fair. I do think there were several times that I was watching, especially Christian Bale, and thinking that, like, this is only good because he has pulled me in so successfully.
Yep.
And I mean, really, it was. It was performances across the board. There really wasn't a
great cast.
Holy cow. Yeah.
Matt Damon as Carroll Shelby. Christian Bale as Ken Miles. John Bernthal as Lee. I should have looked this up first. Lee Iacocca? I don't know. an Italian name? Anyway. So there's a bunch of really great actors in this. I really also freaking love Noah Jupe, who played Ken Miles' kid. Catriona Balfe? I don't know how to say her name either. Man, I'm just a real American
dude. Was that Ken's wife?
Yes, Ken's wife.
She was great.
She was good. Molly Miles. I really liked her a lot. There was a lot of other sort of character actors in here that were just great. Like, a really solid cast. Obviously, headlining is Matt Damon and Christian Bale. Also, I really love Tracy Letts as Henry Ford II. We'll get into that a little more. So, awesome cast. If it had been slightly less well cast, I think it would have been a real disaster in terms of entertainment. So that's my non-spoilered take. Anything else to say before we spoil?
No, the last thing I'll say is I went into this movie expecting an Oscar kind of movie. It was, for me, I don't think for you, but for me, it was more fun than a lot of Oscar movies. But it wasn't quite that caliber. Christian Bale was nominated just recently for the Golden Globe for this movie, but maybe that transitions, but it's partially because he's Christian Bale, not because this movie is all sorts of great. But my recommendation is for people to see it. I think a lot of people and it doesn't matter who you are. I think you'll enjoy it. If you're looking for a movie to go watch with your dad, this is like that movie.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I had a good time. I did not have a not good time. I had a good time, which is my, as everyone should know by now, my number one rubric for a movie.
Yeah.
Please show me a good time. Otherwise, why did I come here? So I think that it was a fun movie. So let's spoil. Okay. I want to start with some nerding out.
Forward.
Yeah. Some nerding out here. One of my favorite scenes, speaking of Tracy Letts as Henry Ford II, it was teased in the preview, but way better in the actual movie. Carroll Shelby's character, or Matt Damon's character, Carroll Shelby, driving Henry Ford around in the parking lot, or the airstrip. Amazing. Like, that scene was so good.
Yeah.
Was so good. And also, I think one of the only times I actually got kind of emotional. Like, vicariously, like, that performance by Tracy Letts, like, as Henry Ford II contemplating, like, his dad's, like, his own father's vision.
Yeah.
And legacy how, and, yeah, yeah, like, that was just a wonderful moment. Yeah. Like, a wonderful moment.
And I gotta say, so I've had two experiences in my life. One was in Florida, they had, like, an amusement ride that was from 0 to 60 in, like, a couple seconds, and it was like this whole thing. And the feeling of that kind of, it is rather, it's like scary in an uneasy way that you, like, that's possible.
Yeah.
Two, my father at one point owned a company that made parts for Corvettes, for race car Corvettes. And we went to a racetrack somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Utah, and I got to ride in the passenger seat of a race car as it did several laps.
Oh, man.
And the scene where Henry Ford just kind of breaks down, and for a second you're like, oh, he's for sure crying. And then, like, you stop for a second and you're like, wait, is he laughing? No, he's definitely crying.
Is he soiling himself?
Yeah, like, what is happening? That is so real. I have been in that situation before where you, like, you wouldn't trade the experience for anything because it's the funnest thing you've ever done, and at the same time, it's the scariest thing that you've ever done, and your life is in the hands of this person, and it's just the just gigantic amounts of different emotions that you're feeling in that moment. I have felt that before. So there was that. And then he starts crying. I thought it was, like, funny at first because I've been there, but then he talks about his dad. Like, if my dad was alive to see this and to feel this, then all of a sudden it had an entirely different, like, emotional weight behind it. And I got a little bit emotional. Like, anyway, that was my story.
I liked it. I liked it. And I don't think that I've had that similar experience, but this is one of the power of one of the ways that cinema is powerful is the way that scene was shot, the way that the whole movie kind of, like, presented those moments of, like, racing and of feeling the power of the vehicle was effective enough that I felt like I could kind of access that a little bit, which is really, really cool.
And the cinematography specifically in that scene, I noticed in a lot of racing movies, the way that they put you in the seat, in the driver's seat, is to literally put you in the driver's seat. It's a point of view of the driver. This movie was mostly outside shots, and they would get a lot to capture the speed. They would get a lot of, like, the cameras going towards the car and the cars coming towards the camera. Yeah. Specifically in the scene where Shelby is driving Ford around, they did that a lot with the barrels and everything. And I thought it was fairly effective. It was less immersive. But it was much more cinematic that way. And I was kind of on board for
and
it.
And well done, too. And that was definitely a directing thing. So, like, once again, talking about James Mangold, like, yes. Like, this is a guy who knows how to do movies. Like, he knows how to do – he knows the cinematic language well enough to know how to deliver very specific feelings at specific moments – with the visual language he's using for the movement of what's happening in the frame. And it works really, really well every time. Like, that's I'd say probably a majority of the pleasure of this movie is watching the way it's shot and the way it's cut together. It's really, really great.
And the sound design.
Yeah.
Like,
amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's like, any time that you get to play with sounds of race cars, it's going to be fairly intriguing.
Yep.
But this one, they did really, really well with it. Especially when they switch out the engine.
Yeah.
Like, it was this high pitch rumble, and then it just became this deep, deep rumble. It was great.
Yes.
I want to nerd out about the, maybe not the screenplay specifically or the writing specifically, but the, I didn't check how accurate it was, but, the events of what happened were fairly unpredictable. This was not like a regular kind of racing. I mean, it was in the ups and downs and the pace of, like, oh, he's going to lose and then they overcome and then he does real good. But the ending of him choosing to slow down and I'll talk about that more later, but, and then him not actually winning and then him dying. And, like, all of that was I did not see coming, which in a racing movie, I kind of appreciate, because especially, like, sports racing movies, they all kind of follow the same cookie cutter, but this one kind of changed things up, and I appreciated it.
It wasn't really about whether or not he would win. It's almost like they gave us that as a foregone conclusion near the beginning when you introduced a Ken Miles character and Carol Shelby, both of them, and their relationship with each other and their relationship to racing. It's very clear that what we are meant to see is that they're the best. Like, the best.
Yeah.
The best, the best, the best. And so,
miles ahead.
Yeah, it's not
pun intended.
It's not supposed to be an open question as to whether they're going to win. The question then becomes, how do they work with other people mm-hmm. to win? Mm-hmm. It's not about whether or not he can win on the track. Yes, of course, 100% he can win on the track. It's not even really about whether or not they can design the fastest car. Carroll Shelby, obviously, a genius engineer, like car engineer. Like, they can do it, absolutely. The question is, can they cut their way through Ford's red tape? Can they, you know, do battle with the political, you know, executives? Can they, you know, show up in the right way for whatever? So there are these other questions that are frankly more interesting than whether or not they're going to win.
Yeah. I like that.
It's good. So, yeah, I think that and in that way, like, I think that this is it's a successful storytelling on that level, where the dramatic tensions are built in more interesting ways than your sort of typical sports movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, you know, kudos to that for that angle. I liked it.
I wanted to talk about, I put this in my critical thought notes, but it is something that I really liked. So I'm going to talk about it now. This is a very good example. We've brought it up over and over and over again. I'm going to bring it up another time. Where you specifically have brought up a good movie, a good story, or a story told well is going to have messages and morals in them because it's a good story that you've told,
yeah.
Not because there's a message that drives the story. That, like, it falls into place when the story is told well. So I was thinking about, okay, what are the things in this movie? I think this is a really good example of a movie that is just told well, a story that is told well, and it happens to have all of these different morals and things in them. So, stream of consciousness, this is what I wrote down as far as morals or values that you can take or that are featured in this movie. Loyalty, determination, overcoming, friendship, family, compromise, identity, talent versus grit, and the biggest one for me, maybe because it's applicable to my life now, and the biggest to the entertainment industry as a whole, which is, at what point does business and structure halt creativity? Or the question of, does that business and structure force creativity because you're working within these binds? So there were so many things in this movie, between father and son, between husband and wife, between friends, brothers in bond, right? There's so many things that were featured in this movie that you could take from this movie. And depending who you are, what life situation that you're in, you're going to take something different from this movie that's going to mean a lot to you. I have a cousin that texted me and said, oh my gosh, Ford v Ferrari is absolutely amazing. You need to see it. Looking, if I like think about him and I think about this movie, there are a few people that I know that are as vocal about their love for their son than this cousin. And my thought is, yeah, he's watching this movie, and to him, this is a father and son movie. This is a Christian Bale to his kid interaction and what they learn together, even though there's 800 other things going on. And that part specifically stuck out to him, and he's going to love it for that reason. For me, it's about the two friends that are brothers in bond, because more so than any other time in my life, I have male friends that I am close to in a very brother way, you being one of them.
I was so nervous that you weren't going to say that. I was like, is he going to talk about me? I hope he does.
Yeah, more so than ever before in my life do I have guy friends that I love like brothers. And so that's what stuck out to me in this movie. So it's like, I was just really impressed that this is just a good story. These characters are doing things that real people would do and apparently have done. So,
yeah.
That is all.
I'm not going to disagree with any of that. I think that there's a lot of richness in sort of the, I want to say there's like a lot of cream on the top of this movie. It's my issues with it. My issues with it stem in kind of when you try to dig a little bit deeper. But before we do that, I want to just mention a couple of other, I mentioned that I love Noah Jupe, and I do. I think he's such a good child actor. I think he's a little bit underutilized in this movie. I think that this is one of my issues, is that I feel like, as awesome as he is as an actor and as amazing as Christian Bale is, like, I feel like their relationship I didn't see very much of it. It was sort of like suggested more than it was developed, if that makes sense.
Sure.
There was
a solid scene or two.
Yeah, a scene or two.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, there wasn't – if there was a central relationship in this movie, it was between Shelby and Miles.
Yeah.
100% it was. And anyway, once again, going to talk about that in a second. Do want to shout out to Noju because he's great.
If you also, context for who he is, he was the kid in A Quiet Place.
Yes. John Bernthal, who plays the sort of marketing director, is an actor that I love.
Also underutilized.
Also underutilized terribly. For those of you who don't necessarily recognize him, although I don't know how you wouldn't,
yeah.
You've seen Punisher. He's Punisher. The Punisher.
He's Shane in Walking Dead.
Yeah.
He's been around.
He's a really good actor. Like, really, really good. Really unique. Has, like, a very, very powerful presence.
Yeah.
About a third of the way through the movie, he disappeared. Like, they literally just forgot that he was a character in the movie.
I noticed that.
So that was a little frustrating. I want to talk about that central relationship a little bit and those two main characters, because as cool as every other little part could be, the main thing is the main thing.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
your main course in this movie is Shelby and Miles and their relationship. Like, it has to be, because, I mean, obviously, it's why it's Matt Damon and Christian Bale.
Yeah.
It's everything hangs on their relationship. And I don't believe that there was very much there.
Oh.
Like, there was a lot of great setup, right? But, like, I don't think, like, no scene was, like, bad. There was no, like, oh, well, that was dumb, or that was a bad line of dialogue,
sure.
Or that was a character choice that I don't believe. Like, none of that. No, it wasn't that there was anything wrong with anything. It's that there was not really an arc for either of them.
Mm.
There was a little bit of an arc for Ken Miles, like that beautiful moment at the end where he decides to slow down, was really great. Really, really great.
And that was a moment that I was like, the only reason this is interesting is because it's Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's such a good actor. He's such a good actor. And he invests his character with so much nuance and depth. But the actual actions and scenes as a, like, taken in aggregate don't really deliver any justification for a change in his character.
Hmm.
If you think about it, if you track his decisions and actions through the movie, he's literally, things are happening to him, and he's saying, yes, I want to race. I want to be this person, and is sad when he doesn't get to be, and is glad when he does get to be. But, like, what is he doing? You know what I mean? Like, what is he doing that is affecting the plot,
sure,
other than just being there? So he's not really making a lot of decisions that justify a dramatic change in character. So even though we're shown a bit of a difference between the beginning and the end, so in the beginning he's, like, just this, you know, like, he's a loose cannon. He throws the wrench. He makes enemies. Like, he, you know, gets himself whatever. And by the end, he hasn't really changed, but, like, Shelby has gone to bat for him powerfully enough that he gets him into the seat, and then he's doing the race and he's proving that he's the best, which we all knew. We all knew he was the best. That
sure.
wasn't the dramatic tension, as we've established.
Yeah.
And so he's the best. And then at one point Shelby says, I hate to ask you this, but they want this picture moment with the other two drivers. And I'm like, well, you know, this is an interesting moment. Like, this is, you know, some decisions or whatever. And so that, like, really one of the first times we get to see him, make a different decision, you know? So,
and yeah. I get what you're saying, and I do think that there could have been more. I got the impression, and what I followed and loved about it so much, was that it was their relationship specifically was it was about Miles trusting Shelby and learning to trust Shelby. And there were a couple of key moments where Miles either did or did not do something that was significant and kind of showed something about the character. So one of the biggest things that we learn about him is that so at the beginning, Miles kind of has this moment where he goes to trust Shelby, that Shelby and him have this connection Shelby gives this whole speech about the guy who is just unbridled passion, right? And he thinks he's going to, Miles thinks he's going to be about him. And he goes, it's Henry Ford II.
My question for you is, why would it have been Shelby? I mean, why would it have been about Miles? Why would Shelby have mentioned Miles at the end of that speech? It wouldn't have made sense.
It wouldn't have made any sense. It doesn't necessarily matter.
Which harms, and also, I don't know that I'm supposed to get the impression from Miles that he's a grandstander, that he needs people to notice him, that he needs to be shouted out on a stage by a speaker or whatever. I didn't really understand that scene.
So what I got from it was that this is basically, I don't know. I am hesitant to start this debate, but you know what? I'm in. Here we are. So the beginning, Miles and the IRS comes and shuts down his garage.
Yeah.
There's this sense that I get from Miles of this like, the institution business suits doesn't like it.
Anti-establishment.
Anti-establishment. So when he is there, there being the speech that Shelby is giving, that when Shelby mentions that this ultimate kind of man who has a passion for, he paints this picture and then he says Ford, it's a betrayal of that friendship in that, it's not that Miles needs the recognition. It's that Shelby is being deceptive about he's building up Ford when it feels like a betrayal to the actual.
He seems like a shill.
I don't know what a shill is.
Somebody who's like marketing for a company
he's a bit of a sellout. And so that's kind of where we start. Mm-hmm. And Shelby cannot convince Miles to come on board because Miles is so anti-establishment. He takes him to the airstrip. He drives around in that car. He has an absolute blast, but it's still not quite enough until he has that moment with his wife. And his wife's like, you're going to get paid how much? Done. You have to do it. So then he's on board, and then it's the journey of Shelby and Miles.
And whether or not they trust each other.
And whether or not specifically Miles trusts Shelby.
Yeah. Which is another sort of tally for Miles having something of an arc and Shelby not really having an arc.
And I can see that.
And I also
Shelby.
Want to point out, I'm glad you mentioned the scene with his wife in the car because when Ken and Molly are driving and she starts driving really fast and she starts becoming hysterical. There's no better word for what happens in that scene.
Sure.
There's no setup for that.
I don't know why she is.
There's literally no reason. I don't know. Maybe there were some scenes that were written or shot and then cut that would have told us or helped us understand why she would be so upset.
The betrayal of him going back to racing should have been more significant.
It really doesn't track. Yeah. And that scene to me felt like, and I felt actually really sad or really, I felt for Catriona because it seemed like she was trying to do a lot with nothing. Mm-hmm. Like they had given her a scene that hadn't earned itself. And then she was tasked with like making it work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like she did the best she could, but like in that moment, I did not like her character at all because it didn't make any sense. And I didn't like his character either because I'm like,
well, just tell her.
This doesn't make any sense. Nothing you guys are doing makes any sense. And so I feel like there was maybe some components missing. And this is one of the good examples that I want to draw on. One of the illustrations of the point I was trying to make earlier, that this is a movie that has a lot of pretense at depth without actually having depth. And one of the things I think that makes me the most frustrated about this is that even though Miles has the closest thing that we can call to an arc, because he's not super volitional in this movie, he's mostly just reacting 2 stuff that happens, mm-hmm. and then doing his thing. You know, it's like when you put him behind a wheel, he's gonna be the best. Great. That's not a character. That's an attribute. That's like a trick. That's a party trick.
Sure.
Like, great. It's really fun to watch, but it's not gonna like have us invest deeply and like learn something from him as a human. And so, the fact that he dies, I recognize that that's like how it happened in real life. Great, got it. But because we failed to, that he didn't develop as a fully formed written character that actually mattered as a protagonist. When he dies, it then sort of feels like more of that kind of cheat thing where, like, you don't know how or you're not sure why there isn't the depth that you want, but you figure it's probably good enough if you kill off the character, sure. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, and what that ends up being is sort of the saint cliche. He's the guy who was too good for this world, and so he dies. Mm. And that, like, really, unfortunately, deflates the whole thing for me. Yeah. Like, the fact that he died made the story way weaker for me because we're like not even given the opportunity to believe that like he learned something and changed significantly that would matter later.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, no, then he died like right away.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, which once again, I realize that's how it really happened. Great. But like, if that's how it really happened, then you needed to do more homework on who this guy really was. Show me some of his weaknesses. Show me how the whole operation almost failed because of specific mistakes and failures that he made.
Yeah.
Either interpersonally or technically or whatever. I want to see that because that's going to help me invest in him as a human being.
I get that. And you're absolutely not wrong. And I did find myself at the end when they were obviously kind of coming down off the high of the climax. I found myself wanting time to have passed.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see like the sun older.
Yeah.
You know, maybe starting to fill in the shoes. Because then I would have been able to kind of fill in the space of that empty time and who the character was and what he's gone through.
Yeah.
So that if he did die and the son was older and had to, you know, like there was, I was trying to grasp for something and I recognized that at the end.
The big emotional payoff was supposed to be the moment where he goes to see, I mean, this is like the literal end of the movie. He goes to see the family of the Miles family and he shows up and he winds up accidentally talking to, Peter, the kid. And the big emotional revelation is that he was your friend. Duh. Like, they were friends at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, there was never any question that they were friends. Like, yes, this is sad, but it's also not substantial. You know, like, this is a slice of life thing. This isn't something that has like real meaning or depth. This is just like a person being sad that their friend died is not a revelation.
Yeah.
That's just what happens. Like, but it was presented as though it were this big dramatic emotional revelation.
You were his friend.
But it's not a revelation.
Yeah.
Like at no point in this movie did I doubt their friendship. At no point in this movie did their friendship seem actually jeopardized.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like, no, this is, I mean, at most there's a hiccup, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there was never any real betrayal. There was nothing that happened that made it so that dramatic tension was teased out well enough to pay off at the end when he has an emotional sort of catharsis. Like, he's clearly having an emotional catharsis, but I can't be there with him because I haven't seen the bits and pieces that would have made that catharsis real for me as an audience. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. Because, again, I found...
You could just say I'm right.
No, I mean... You're right.
Is that so hard?
Yes.
I mean, I think I did that to you earlier as well. I said, you're not wrong. No, yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree. You're right in that that emotional moment did not land for me either. I found myself hoping that he went in and talked to her because I wanted something else.
Yeah.
And like the relationship, it's a fascinating relationship. The relationship of like a bro's wife, you know what I mean? Like you're like a guy's best friend's wife, Because there are the two people that know that guy the best in life are those two people.
Absolutely.
And they, and in very similar ways and in very different ways.
Absolutely.
And so it's a real interesting kind of dialogue that they could have had.
It's a really interesting scenario. It's a really interesting idea for a story, but that's really different than a story well told.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the frustration. So I'm watching something that is inherently interesting, but there's not. Yeah.
So did this land like a little better than lukewarm for you? The movie as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I walked out being like, yeah, that was really fun. That was good.
Yeah.
Like that was a good movie. Like it was like there was not. I could not be enthusiastic about this movie. I did not have a big emotional reaction to this movie. I had a good time, which is great.
Yeah.
I love having a good time. But like I wasn't going to – there wasn't – I don't think there was really anything significant to leave this movie with. Like nothing that I felt like – so one of the things that happens to me as I'm leaving the theater is there's this thing in the back of my brain that kind of like either checks a box or doesn't and the box is next to the note, did this movie deserve to get made? Like, is it ultimately good, like to the greater good with like capital G's, that the money and time was spent to get this movie made? And sometimes I leave the theater having had a good time, but being like, honestly, if I had never seen that movie,
wouldn't have made a difference.
It wouldn't have made any difference at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how many people it did. I mean, maybe there are some. There probably are some for whom it made a real difference.
There are definitely some.
But I would be surprised if there were a lot.
Mm.
I think most people are going to be really impressed with how well it is executed, like craftsmanship-wise. Like,
yeah.
It is a gorgeous film that is basically perfect in production design, in editing, in acting, in cinematography. I mean, this is a very well-constructed movie.
Very well.
And that's really awesome. But the story, I don't think, is there.
Hmm.
And so it's hard for me to feel justified as I'm leaving.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That's funny because I have a I have a critique, a review system in my head that serves a similar functionality as that, which is if I were to show this, like I had seen it and I were to show this movie to somebody in my home, how aggressively would I want them to pay attention? Right. So when I think about,
that's interesting. I like that. I like that angle a lot.
So when I think about the movie, we've talked about the movie a lot, About Time. Love that movie.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
If you're watching it with somebody, shh, do not talk.
If you get on your phone for a second,
I will hit you in the face.
And across the face. With this movie, if I were to show this movie to somebody, I don't really care what you do. You want to grab some popcorn?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Might play a game of Settlers.
Yeah. Like if it's like the real good moment, I might pause it for you.
Yeah.
But like About Time, I'm not pausing. You're not talking. You're not going to the bathroom. You're not nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just watching. So I get that. I get that there's something that's missing, but it's still a good movie. I still had a good time, and I would recommend it. Like if somebody's asking me, what movie should I see? I'll probably – like what movie of 2019 should I watch? You know, depending on the – for my dad, it might be like the second or third movie I recommend.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So it's like it serves a purpose.
Yeah.
Whether that purpose is worthy of the amount of effort it took to make the movie, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly – not for me to judge in any effective way. I mean, no one –
Yeah, sure.
Other than – all of the people listening to this podcast, which is I think it's everybody, but like I'm not saying that everybody should, you know, do things differently based on anyway. I'm in the weeds here. I need to be rescued. I mostly am excited to talk about what we're gonna be doing next week.
I just about hopped in there and invoked Michael Bond Miller just to help out.
I have this like nagging feeling that there was something else I really wanted to say, but it like left it's at gone. Some point, and I'm like hoping it comes back in the middle of me like closing the episode, but I don't think it's coming back, so let's stop. That's it for Ford v Ferrari. I will say this, I will be disappointed if this movie performs really well in the Academy nominations. I won't be surprised, but I'll be disappointed.
Outside of sound nominations
and cinematography, I'd give it to.
Sure.
I'd give it some cinematography, even maybe a little bit of editing for some of those sequences, but like sound, cinematography, like honestly, I've seen better from Matt Damon. I've seen better from Christian Bale. Like they're both fantastic, but they didn't have much to work with. So yeah. Like I don't want this movie to get as much Oscar love as it very well might. That's all.
Okay. All right. We'll see. I agree with you.
Well, thank you.
You're not wrong.
Oh, thank you. So who was it you were going to thank?
Michael Baumiller for the wonderful music.
Excellent. Wait, should we
talk about what we're talking about next week?
We really should. So Michael Baumiller is going to get at least one more mention before the end of the episode. But before then, next week is our Star Wars week, which I'm real excited about.
As
you can imagine.
Yeah. You waited a long time for this week.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, I feel it on my fingertips. I'm right there.
I mean, I might as well just like bring a lazy boy. I'll just let you talk the whole time. I'll take a quick nap while we record.
Bring a lazy boy. I just got this visual of you dragging the lazy boy into our recording room. Just like, what are you doing there, CJ?
Preparing to talk about or not talk about Star Wars.
Getting ready.
So.
No, I will. You will have lots to say or I'll be real upset. Okay. So we're doing Star Wars: The Force Awakens. On Wednesday, we're doing Star Wars: The Last Jedi, which we've been teasing for a year and a half. And on Friday afternoon, our episode about The Rise of Skywalker will release. Now, I don't anticipate that most of our audience will have necessarily seen the movie already by the time we release that episode, but here's the thing. As soon as you see the movie...
It'll be there.
It'll be there waiting for you.
Yep. Well, we probably have a lot that are going to watch it Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm sure. So those people can wake up the next day and they can listen to our episode.
Yes. And then we should warn you that we are, for the first time in a while... We're taking off some time.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
To get through the holidays. It's a busy time. We're both out of town. But we will come back strong in 2020 just for
so
you.
So strong. It'll make you uncomfortable how strong we are. I will.
Not sure what that means.
There will be one sort of like break episode that gets released that we're gonna log our Jumanji episode in advance so that on that Friday of the 27th after Christmas, if you really got to get some Nerd Critic on.
When you're driving to all your holiday parties.
You can hop right in and re-listen to all of our old episodes, and we'll have one new one for you on Jumanji. And then after the 27th, it's going to be, I believe, January...
Ooh. 7th?
January 14th. I think it'll be January 10th.
10th.
That the
one of those days.
Yeah, it'll be January. Whatever the first, second, I want to say the second Friday.
It is the second Friday.
The second Friday of January will be our first episode back in 2020. That episode will be our top 10 of 2019.
Correct.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. Lots of good stuff to look forward to. Lots of movies to watch between now and then. Anyway, I should cut this off. We don't need to talk any more about next year.
We can stop.
It's time to stop.
Okay.
It's time to once again, and for the last time, thank Michael Baumiller for the music, which is now playing as we remind you to remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.